Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027.
Welcome to the Closing Marker Report. It's December the 6th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, we'll check in on the continuing row over beef and exports to Japan. They thought that market might open up, but, well, they're still not sure. And a little later in the program, we'll take a deeper look at the WTO negotiations scheduled to kick off December the 13th in Hong Kong. That all comes up during this Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat at 299 3/4, down 4 3/4 today. The March contract at 315 3/4 for the soft red winter wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, down 4.5 cents. December wheat at the Kansas City Board of Trade was down 4 today at 363. From the corn pit in Chicago, December contract, the lead option at 190 3/4, down 2 3/4 for the day. March futures off 2.5 cents at 204 1/4. May corn 213, down 2.5, and December contract at 240.5 for next year, down 2.25. January soybeans down 9.25 cents, 564 the settlement price for the day. The March futures at 571 were off 8.5 cents, and the May contract 575.5, down 8. November beans down 6 3/4 at 587. Bean meal futures, December contract 175.10, they were off 50 cents. December bean oil at 21.05, down 61. From the Mercantile Exchange, nearby feeder cattle at 115.32.5 for the Jans. They were off $1.05 today. December live cattle at 92.72.5 were off 12.5 cents. And December lean hog settled 35 cents lower at $62.65 a hundredweight.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and the Kansas City Board of Trade is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hi, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the beans. Turnaround Tuesday. You get Turnaround Tuesday all the time because this is your regular slot. That's got to be tough on you sometimes, having to come in and talk about a down day.
Well, you betcha it is. It's not much fun to talk about down days. It would have been a lot more fun to have yesterday and said, look at how we've moved. But, you know, it was the same people that were the buyers yesterday seemed to turn around and come in this morning and be the sellers one more time, Todd. They took some profits, banked them up before the end of the year, but they decided when they looked at everything and how they thought that the report was going to come out on Friday, they turned around and the funds early this morning sold about 3,000 contracts each commodity earlier, and that set the tone early, and it just didn't want to come back.
Tell me about more about the report Friday.
More about the report Friday. Well, of course, we won't change any production numbers, but we will probably look at some decreased export numbers because we seem to be lagging where we want to go there. The average guess for corn on the carryout number is 2.339. The November number was at 2.319, so that's a 20 million bushel increase in the carryout there. And the beans, we went from 350 to 386 for the average guess of the carryout, so that's up 36 million bushel there. So those are some pretty sizable increases again, and that's sort of because they're looking at that, why those are sizable in, you know, carryouts at the end of the year. So
when we take a look at this fundamentally, and if those numbers were to come to fruition, I guess the question is, does it really change the picture for the marketplace very much, or are they built into this marketplace, and have they been built in over time?
Well, the two things there, Todd. The numbers themselves are gigantic, and then gigantic getting bigger is not a good thing, and it reminds us we probably don't have to rally a lot unless there's something we're not seeing out there, like, a big drought. La Nina does cut our crop short. Something happens in Brazil or South America or some other new news. But, when we say we look at that, we have to realize that it has to be something new every day because this is a futures market. And we've got all the news figured in at the end of every day. So it does have to be something new to change it. So, but anyhow, it does remind us that those are big numbers. And without some sort of shortfall in production for next year, we're going to have more big numbers again at the end of the next year.
Let's talk a little bit about the 2006 crop, in fact, and what you're telling producers that they might want to consider at this point to do with both the corn and soybeans that they'll be harvesting next fall.
Well, we've sold a percentage already of the new crop corn and beans, thinking that, between the 240 above level in the corn and around the $6 level in the beans is not a bad place to start doing something. We're hoping, like everybody else, for a little bit of a rally down the road to get some more pricing done. When things dip a little bit more, why, we're probably going to be buying some courage calls with the idea that give us a little oomph to do some selling at that point in time. So, like I say, we, because of these big carryout numbers, we're not as optimistic as we usually are.
I guess producers will not be willing, at least at this point, to make cash sales, I wouldn't think. And they would be awfully reticent to look at the futures market and say that this is enough, for their crop for the 2006 corn and soybeans, and for that matter, for wheat, if they're into that market. Do you have to do much convincing when you have them on the phone that this might be a good place to start marketing next year's crop?
I think that's an understatement, Todd. I think that the majority of the farmers right here are saying, look, all of our expenses are up dramatically. We're hearing some cash rents going up. We're seeing fertilizer at all-time highs. We're seeing diesel fuel at all-time highs. All of their inputs are higher. We're seeing interest rates go up, so even their money is going to be higher. And yet we're talking about not that good of prices. I'm sorry, you take 240, you take a basis off, you take anything else off along with it, and you're not that much above loan price. So it's very difficult to say, hey, you need to be locking it when you're seeing your inputs go up, 10-20%. To say, well, lock in loan price. So it isn't anything that's an easy task as far as what doing. But we do feel that if this does carry out, we'll see a lot like next year. And unfortunately, we hate to say we're farming for the LDP, but we're farming for the LDP.
You're farming for the LDP. I was thinking about this just a bit last night at home and wondering how this might play out in the future, looking at the higher price of fuel and fertilizer inputs, the cost of moving this crop and distribution around the globe, the use of ethanol, which is a good sign for the marketplace. But from the supply side, what many consider a burdensome supply, and then on the demand side, thinking how that chain actually works and what producers and processors like ADM and Cargill and ConAgra and Bunge might be doing, and then who ends up paying the bill on this one. Farmers certainly don't want to do that. They end up with a low or a very low price for their crop. It seems to me that the middlemen are trying to find a place where they can make money, some would say a lot of money, but they're not willing really to put quote, the screws to the consumers to bring the price of food any higher, certainly in the U.S., and distribution of food around the globe, I suppose, as well. So the question is, what gives eventually in this marketplace, and how is it that things give? The last time I think this happened, or as this happens, what usually happens is that we lose farmers and farms get bigger.
Todd, that's the trend right now. We tend to see it because the income per acre is very low. You have to have a lot of acres if you aren't making much per acre. And that's what is happening and continue to happen. If we look at all the statistics, the number of farmers continues to decrease and the size of the farms continues to increase. So it's just more of the same. It's not a pretty sight for the small family farmer that the other ground is not available to expand for, come back to, or to make a decent living without having a job in town. Farming as a way of life has changed immensely since my childhood till now, of course.
I had another discussion. I had this discussion with my father because we were talking about how to stay on the farm. And Dad put four boys on the farm. I've got four older brothers that farm, one and the two younger, myself and my younger brother do not. But how you put boys on the farm or girls on the farm and how you stay on the farm once you're there. And then working in some of the economics. And one of the things that the economists here on campus often say is that the producers really have to take a look at some of their highest price inputs and hardware. In this case, that would be a combine. And try to look like they're 5,000 acres instead of 1,000 or 800 or 500 acres. And the only way they can do that is to share that combine. And I asked Dad whether that was something that he thought would be worthwhile or willing to do. And he said, no, absolutely not, that the crop was too vital to get out in under time constraints. And I wondered whether at that point, if he was working just off an older generation thought about the crop. We can put the corn and the bean crop in the ground very quickly. It comes out actually very quickly too, and I understand that there are standability problems, but that there might be ways that producers can take a look at sharing machinery. And I don't know whether you have these kind of discussions as you're sitting around the office with your clientele or just with your office mates there or not.
Well, I think, Todd, that you come up with a very good idea. I mean, and we see a lot of successful operations, if they're going to stay somewhat what we would call a small farmer, which would be under 2,000 acres, the successful ones are sharing workloads. They're going out, they're helping each other. You know, they have one combine between three or four farmers, and then the others, they go in to help the one farmer that has the combine get done faster so they can get to him. You know, the other guys are driving the trucks, the auger wagons, the whatever, and it does work quite well. And that is an awfully expensive machine to use less than a month a year in a new combine. The other case is we are seeing a lot of our good customers that are highly maintaining things. I mean, they go through their combines religiously at the end of harvest, so they're in great shape to go. They're an old machine, but they do want their own machine, but they do spend a lot of time. And they are not scared to put some parts on that combine rather than have to go buy a whole new one.
There's a lot of money behind that combine, and it takes, you know, when it takes $250,000 to replace it, that gives you a good shove to make sure that thing is in good condition. Anything else to add before we let you go for the day?
Well, I think, you know, as we look over at the livestock markets, just a quick thing. Choice box beef was up more than $2 this morning, so that helped us from going down as much as we were earlier in the day, and there, but there seems to be some pressure from just rolling out a liquidation out of the contracts in the December here. As far we did see lower ham prices with the hogs and expectations a little more of the same. It looks like we've probably got enough hams in the market, and the pork exports to Japan might be hurt by the resumption of beef exports. So that's just a little bit looking at what's happening over at the market.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bezdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the air, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Ed Keezer, chief meteorologist here. Forecast for this evening in the far northern parts of Indiana. Mostly cloudy skies, some snow showers, elsewhere partly cloudy. Lows will range this evening, he says, from 3 below zero in northwestern Illinois to 17 above in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, in far northern Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs will range from 10 in northwestern Illinois to 28 in the south. In today's agricultural news, well, there's no certain date, after all, for the Japanese beef route to end. A press report on a meat industry website over the weekend said Japan's ambassador to the United States had told American meat institution officials that Japan would resume buying U.S. beef by mid-December, but AMI officials say that report is inaccurate. Jim Hodges, president of the AMI Foundation, told Gary Truitt of the Brownfield Network that the meeting was just one of several AMI has had with Japanese official and that nothing new was presented at the meeting with the Japanese ambassador. Hodges says the Japanese ambassador identified no specific day of the week Japan would resume U.S. beef imports, and Hodges points out when it does happen, those imports will be limited. Only beef from animals 20 months of age and younger will be allowed, which represents a very small portion of the $1.4 billion market the U.S. once had with Japan. While recent events suggest Japan is inching closer toward a limited reopening of its market to U.S. beef, an exact timetable remains non-existent. Well, a study shows the United States is in violation of the WTO agreement that's currently in place when Congress begins working on the farm policy that will replace the 2002 Farm Bill in 2007. Director of the University of California Agricultural Issues Center, Daniel Sumner, says legislators need to make, in his words, real and durable improvements in agricultural policy. That's because, according to a study released by the Cato Institute yesterday, farm subsidy programs in the U.S. directly violate the country's agreement with the World Trade Organization. According to Sumner, who also serves as Brazil's economic consultant in the WTO cotton case, the recent WTO ruling against the U.S. cotton subsidy sheds light on the conflict between farm programs in the U.S. and the nation's international obligations. And cotton, Sumner says, isn't the only commodity vulnerable to a WTO challenge. Sumner says U.S. farm subsidies are well above the $19.1 billion limit set by the WTO, totaling, in his case, $29.1 billion in 2000, $25.3 billion in 2001, and projected a total of $26.3 billion in 2006. Beyond that, Sumner says U.S. farm programs depress world corn prices by 9 to 10%, world wheat prices by 6 to 8%, and world rice prices by 4 to 6%. He says that's a violation, of course, of the WTO agreement on subsidies and countervailing measures. Well, French President Jacques Chirac says the U.S. must remove its subsidies to cotton farmers if African growers are to have a fair opportunity to compete internationally. Chirac, who made his comments during a summit in Africa, says the high subsidies U.S. farmers receive depress prices and cut earnings for producers in the former French colonies of Benin, Burkina Faso, and Chad and Mali, or rather Mali. Mali's president agreed with Chirac, saying African leaders cannot continue allowing African producers to sow cotton and harvest deficits while, and these are his words, rich nations sow the same cotton and harvest subsidies. Well, the Hong Kong ministerial will begin in just 1 week, and world trade leaders are still working to gain some momentum ahead of the important meeting. Agriculture has been a stumbling block for the Doha round of the World Trade Organization negotiations, but in recent weeks, the European Union has called for progress on non-agricultural issues. Over the weekend, some progress was made. Government officials from India, Brazil, China, South Africa, and Russia attended talks with finance ministers from the G7 group of nations, including the U.S., Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan. The Brazilian government made an offer then to make further cuts to non-ag industrial tariffs. And the USDA has unveiled a revamped NAS website. USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service is making it easier to access ag data on its newly redesigned website. NAS Administrator Ronald Bosker says the new website is user-friendly and provides those inside and outside the ag industry with an abundance of ag statistics. Bosker says the website has been revamped in response to feedback from a variety of sources, including ag association members, trade organizations, university researchers, and the general public. The new NAS website now includes a new Google-powered search engine, an SVG interactive mapping application, an RSS newsfeed, and XML technology. It might even come with a glossary if you're not sure what all that means. Of course, you can still find all USDA reports on the news website, in addition to word on the latest surveys being conducted in the field, and information on the upcoming 2000 Census of Agriculture, too. The new website is at nas.usda.gov. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to The Information Advantage. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, last-minute efforts are underway to salvage a meaningful result in the World Trade Talks next week in Hong Kong, key to meeting a 2006 goal for a new global deal. With just days left before the key Hong Kong WTO ministerial meeting, U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns and U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman have been pushing for more progress, and developing nations Brazil and India have sweetened their offers on industrial tariffs in return for better EU and U.S. ag concessions. USDA Undersecretary for Farm and Foreign Services J.B. Penn has just returned from Hong Kong's meetings in Geneva, and he says he has a new and improved outlook for the upcoming ministerial.
It's my impression now that Hong Kong can amount to more than just a stock-taking. Everybody is working very hard all this week in Geneva and in capitals elsewhere to try to be able to add some building blocks to the ministerial text that has been prepared for Hong Kong, and to establish a launch point for a lot of intense work in the very early part of the new year.
Joe O'Mara was the chief U.S. negotiator during the Uruguay round of the talks in the 80s and early 90s. He says the commitment to the Doha round shown by U.S. leaders is key.
That there can't be an agreement in Hong Kong is certainly understood, but the efforts of Secretary Johanns and Ambassador Portman show that the United States continues to hold very high objectives for the Doha round outcome, and that's what's important.
Still, O'Mara says there has been progress in September, where there wasn't even a European Union offer.
I think there's been progress made, and for me, it's better not to have an agreement at Hong Kong until significant further progress has been made.
O'Mara says much more negotiation is needed, especially on improving market access in agriculture.
Efforts to get a substantial outcome in market access, for example, in agriculture, have been intense, and it is clear 1 week now before Hong Kong that more negotiation must take place before there can be an agreement, and I therefore am measuring progress relative to what it was in September, let's say.
O'Mara says the differences in agriculture are essential, as are those in non-agricultural market access as well as services, and all three efforts must move forward in unison. Otherwise, O'Mara says the overall talks will stall again. O'Mara is a Washington trade consultant and chair of the USDA USTR Advisory Board on Trade. This story was provided to WILL as a courtesy of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather. Your local newscast is next.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Former Governor George Ryan's trial has been called off for the day. Federal Judge Rebecca Pallmeyer says one juror came down with a fever and others were beginning to feel sick as well. The judge sent jurors home with instructions to return tomorrow. A real estate appraiser was on the stand when Pallmeyer stopped the proceedings this morning. He testified taxpayers paid $900,000 too much to rent three properties from Ryan's friends. Ryan and lobbyist Larry Warner are charged in a 22-count indictment with racketeering, mail fraud, and other offenses. Prosecutors say Ryan steered big-money leases to his friends and got gifts and free vacations in return. Ryan and Warner say they did nothing they did was illegal. Prosecutors this week are expected to call to the stand Ryan's former press secretary, Dennis Culleton. Representative Naomi Jacobson of Urbana says she wants to serve 2 more years in the Illinois House. The Democrat says she can point to bills extending health care to all Illinois children and protecting senior citizens from consumer fraud among her accomplishments. Jacobson unseated Republican Tom Burns 4 years ago and won re-election by a comfortable margin in 2004. So far, no Republicans have said they plan to run. Dan Hines has launched his campaign for a third term as state comptroller. The 37-year-old Democrat says Illinois continues to face difficult challenges, so he wants to help keep an eye on state finances. Hines has advocated measures to help balance the budget and has sometimes criticized Governor Ral Blagojevich, a fellow Democrat. On the Republican side, State Senator Carol Pankow says she plans to run for comptroller, too. A crash on the tri-state tollway in the Chicago suburbs has killed a man from Tolono. Officials say 27-year-old Louis Lingefelter was working as a contractor on the interstate when a semi-truck pushed a maintenance truck into the construction crew. Starting next spring, unemployed Hoosiers may get their unemployment compensation in debit cards instead of checks. The Indiana Department of Workforce Development says the cards could also be used for child support payments. Workforce Development Commissioner Ron Stiver says the change will save the state at least $1.1 million a year in postage. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. This is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don.
Hi there.
I suppose you got those snowmobiles all set and we're rocking and rolling across some really quite nice snow that you had out west.
Yeah, if anybody is a skier or chomping at the bit to find some good skiing over this holiday season, you'll find it a lot of snow in the Rockies.
And then tell me about here in the Midwest. We actually have snow on the ground.
Yeah, snow on the ground. Boy, I tell you, just like somebody hit a light switch, we have just gone into a winter weather pattern across the entire United States. In fact, just about all lower 48 states over the next 5 to 10 days will have temperatures averaging below normal. Only California will see near normal temperatures, and this all due to a shifting jet stream that will continue to keep temperatures chilly and the weather pattern active, although, Todd, it's going to be a trend now that's going to be a little bit drier. We're going to see some stormy weather along the East Coast, the Southeast, and the Gulf Coast states, but precipitation chances won't be as high now in the Midwest.
I see that lows for this evening in the northwestern part of Illinois are below zero?
That's a very good possibility. In fact, there will be over the next 2 nights possible record temperatures in some of the areas of the upper Midwest and areas of the Dakotas. There will be some minus 20s and minus 30s in the western plains over the next couple of nights.
Ooh, wow, bundle up. That's cold. Any wind to go along with that? I hope not.
A little bit, but when it's that cold, the wind has a hard time blowing. And so from that standpoint, it won't be too bad.
And then tell me about warmer climes, in particular South America.
Well, they're going to see some good precipitation in Brazil. There will be shower activity across areas of Argentina. And they're looking at most of South America at a weather pattern right now with temperatures near to a touch below normal. So they are not going to gain a lot of ground with growing degree day accumulation in South America, but precipitation chances remain good, especially for Brazil.
Anything else we need to touch on the global agricultural sites?
At least in the Northern Hemisphere, winter has started. It's not only cold in the U.S., but cold in Western Europe, China, and many areas of the northern latitudes.
We appreciate you being with us, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Tuesday afternoons. If you'd like to hear what Don had to say again or anything from most of our ag programming all day long, the pre-opening, the opening, Sue Martin's comments at noon, the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, you can pick it all up on our website at will.uiuc.edu. Just click on AM and then Agriculture. There you'll be able to listen to things directly from the website. If you'd like to sign up for our podcast, that's a possibility too. That way you can have the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week delivered to your computer automatically. And don't forget to sign up for our Weekend Ag E-Letter. delivered to your email address. It's something many people have signed up for. They find it of great value. And you can always unsubscribe if you'd like. Both of those happen on the website as well. Just pick it up at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Click on AM. And then, as always, agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.